Mark,
how you doing?
Good.
Hey, it's been a while. Yeah, man. Last time we talked, you were actually in a different building.
Actually, the last time we talked was over in the conference center.
Well, yeah, but that doesn't count because we had professional cameras on us. We were streaming live, but that's a great point.
Yeah.
And that was a great conversation, and we're not going to duplicate that today because people can just go watch that. So I wanted to bring my camera into your office. You're now working in Windows Azure. You're still a technical fellow. You're still working on the low-level things. Mm-hmm. But you have a new problem space. I wanted to come and just chat with you about it.
Okay.
The Fabric controller.
Yep.
And, of course, that's affected the evolution of your tools for SysInternals because you might want to evaluate and understand what's going on in the cloud
when
things are computing. But I want to ask you right off the bat, what's the Fabric controller?
The Fabric controller, well, so if you look at Azure, it's a platform as a service. Mm-hmm. The platform is essentially an operating system for the data center, and the Fabric controller is the equivalent of the kernel for that kind of operating system.
So it schedules processes?
So it's similar. Okay. So if you consider a process like an application on Windows, the kernel executes the process, it manages the threads of the process. When the process dies, it does the cleanup of the resources. It figures out how much CPU to give the process, how much physical memory to give the process. Mm-hmm. The Fabric controller decides, for an Azure application, what nodes to put it on, monitors its health, mm-hmm. does the cleanup after the thing exits, sets up connections between the different pieces of it.
Okay. So let me ask you a question. I mean,
That's part of what it
does. That's part of what it does, and we'll get deeper into it, I hope, if we can get you up to the whiteboard, because it's been a long time. Yeah. Maybe we'll do that.
Actually, a lot of times I don't even go to the whiteboard.
You know, and we always have the same conversation. Like, I always say the same thing. Yeah. You're like, I really don't need to go. Yeah. I can just, because you can explain complicated things in a way that people can understand.
And my whiteboard skills are pretty lacking.
Fair enough. So my hope is that after people watch this, they can go, that's what the Fabric controller does, and that's what Mark is working on.
Yeah.
So that's the simple goal of this conversation. Okay. On Windows, as you know very well, you guys had to do things in the kernel world to ensure that, say, certain applications wouldn't dominate the whole system, take over, use too many processes, schedule too many threads. So you did kind of things in there with thread priority and stuff like that. Is there an analogy for the Fabric world, or does it really matter?
Well, even in Windows isn't designed, actually, to prevent denial-of-service attacks. Mm. So the thread priorities in Windows were mainly around responsiveness for different types of tasks. And really, it's a relative thing in Windows. On the Fabric controller level, in the Azure data center level, an application can't dominate. It's pretty isolated.
Okay.
And I guess one way that it could potentially take over is if it said, hey, I want 50,000 instances or whatever, and took over the whole data center. You know, it requested every VM in the whole data center. And so there was no room to run anything else.
Sure. And that can't happen.
That can't happen. So there's a cap on the number of instances you can define in a service, and if you want to exceed it, you have to call in and make arrangements specially so that we can, do the capacity planning required to accommodate you. And there are, we do have customers that have hundreds or thousands of instances run in their workloads.
Wow. And let me ask, Windows Azure, when I think about it, it really seems to me these data centers to just be a giant PC, giant computer.
It's like a giant server.
That's what it is, right?
Yep.
And so, but do you think there's a possibility of being able to program such a thing? So we've talked about, what if you have something that has 1,200 cores, and how are you going to deal with it? Back when we had the concurrency freakout stage, which now we're starting to get our heads around, it's still a problem, we are working on it. In the cloud, it becomes even more obvious. If I have 500,000 cores to deal with, how do I program that? How do I make sense out of that? So, I mean, talk to me about it.
Well, so one of the things that cloud is really doing is taking forward the common network multi-tier architectures that people are accustomed to writing and just being able to provision those quickly and cheaply, those kinds of applications. That's the easiest way to program is stateful, scale-out applications where you get availability in the process. Okay. And people have been doing that kind of stuff for server applications forever.
Mm-hmm.
Highly parallelizable workloads, highly stateless workloads, your typical ASP.NET page with your middle tier worker that talks to backend store. That is a pattern that works really well in the cloud.
Okay.
HPC, which is a similar kind of workload, very scalable, highly parallelizable, that also can take advantage of the data center pretty easily.
Okay.
And people have been doing that forever.
Sure.
So it's a little bit different than kind of the client side programming where people have been used to one core and one thread,
mm-hmm.
and now they want to take advantage of multiple threads and they got to figure out where. Those kinds of client workloads a lot of times aren't parallelizable easily,
sure.
or it's not obvious, or it's not easy to do it.
Mm.
One thing you do get into the cloud that's different than what people are accustomed to in that kind of programming is asynchrony.
Mm-hmm.
When you're talking between different components and you've got latencies through the network, and this is one place that, you know, Anders gave a talk about the future of C# at the PDC.
Yes.
And there's going to be nice asynchronous support in C# 5.
Yep.
Which is going to make that kind of programming even easier.
Fair enough. But, I mean, I guess where I was trying to go with that was I don't know that people really understand what it means to... I mean, I was talking to Jeron Lanier. I don't know if you know Jeron. He's you know, he's sort of on the more radical side of engineering. He's one of the people who invented virtual reality,
mm-hmm.
or at least the term, and was a very hotshot young programmer back in the 80s. And now he works for Microsoft. He's done a lot of other things besides that. We had a conversation on Channel 9, and one of the things he's working on is how do you program a giant computer in the sky? And so one thing that seems to be the case is you're going to be doing it on Windows Azure and the Fabric Controller.
Mm-hmm.
And so my question was really along the lines of something, rather than just having a hosting capability for an existing server application to put up where I don't have to manage it anymore in Windows Azure, which is a beautiful thing because all the rocket science is done by you guys. What if I want to actually just take advantage of the compute power that you're giving me? And let me analyze, you know, galactic data in a very fast way without having to use a tool that is completely foreign to me, like Dryad, for example. Although Link to Dryad would be is an interesting thing. So that's what I'm trying to ask Mark is, initially, this is a big computer in the sky, right?
Yeah.
That's how I want to think about it.
Okay, so I think I see where you're going.
Okay.
There's existing patterns, but... Let's say talk about if there are new patterns that get evolved out of this. And actually, so the AppFabric guys.
Okay.
One example of where they're working on creating a new pattern where you don't worry about where your app runs and what pieces it's connecting with. It just you specify the modules that you want, and the connections are all done by the runtime. The placement and execution is done by the runtime, and your app can take advantage of compute resources as required to support whatever kind of scale you say you want.
Okay.
They are taking things up to a very high level of abstraction and betting on the fact that lots of programs will like that layer, that kind of working at that layer. Now, what the fabric does is provide kind of raw CPUs. It's kind of like the kernel provides raw CPUs, and then people build on top of that parallel libraries.
Mm-hmm.
To take advantage of those cores. I think that's kind of the, if you follow that analogy, AppFabric is like the libraries, and underneath the fabric is providing the cores.
Okay.
And so I'm really focused at the fabric layer.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're going to stay there.
Yeah.
I've clearly had too much coffee, so we're going to now really, I want to just give you the ability to talk a little bit more deeply about you know, this kernel in the sky that you are now spending a lot of your time and, of course, writing tools for.
Yeah.
So I think we know what the Fabric Controller is now, but I think it's also really interesting how it works exactly.
Yeah.
So can you...
Well, it does a whole bunch of different things.
Yes.
Now, as far as how it works, you need to be a little more direct.
Okay, I'll be a more directive. So I have an application that I deploy to Windows Azure.
Yeah.
I have my worker role... and a web role, and those are simply proxy names for something else, right?
Yeah.
Those are actually, like, you can be a little more...
But those are role types.
Okay.
You can name them. Actually, they are web role and worker role.
Okay.
Those are the official
terms. Those are the official technical
terms. Yeah.
Okay. And so what I want to know is, I deploy my app, my web app, Channel 9, for example, and you then take it from there and ensure that I'm going to always be available and be able to scale according to how I declaratively tell you I want to run on 10 nodes because the PDC is coming up, and you take care of all that for me. And then you have all the redundancy and all the copies.
Right.
How do you manage that? And then so how many instances of the kernel are there at any point? So so that's what I want to ask as well. So that's where I'm going.
So we've got data centers.
Yes.
We've got data centers around the world. We've got multiple fabric controllers running in each data center. Now and that's just an implementation issue at this point. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get into exactly
what. No, that's fine. Don't.
Actual numbers, because they're going to be changing.
Great.
But and eventually we'll have one fabric controller that manages a whole data center.
Okay.
But the fabric controller itself is highly available as well. Runs multiple instances, so a minimum of three to be highly available, or more, and that's also flexible.
Okay.
Each instance of the fabric controller has all the state of what's going on inside of the fabric that it's managing. And there's one of them that's the primary that's elected using standard distributed algorithms, the Paxos algorithm, to choose a leader. Mm-hmm. And that leader is the one that is directing the changes of state across the fabric.
Okay.
And a change of state might be, this machine is provisioned, it's got the host OS booted on it, it's got some VMs on it, it's got some roles deployed to it. When we want to stop a role or start a role or create a VM, those are changes to the state of the fabric. And that's orchestrated by the fabric controller with the help of agents on those individual machines.
Hmm.
So as far as number of instances, that you can think of it within a fabric, there's one instance, but it's replicated.
Okay. Now, is there, like on Windows,
you
can only have, even on the top of the line, greatest version of Windows out there, you can only really have so many applications running at the same time doing substantial work.
Yeah.
How does that, in an analogous sense, apply to your world? I mean, how much can a single fabric controller, as it exists today, or even in the future when it's just one thing, I mean, how can it manage? Let's assume Windows Azure is phenomenally successful, and that would be a great thing.
Yeah.
How much can these things handle, man? That's what I'm asking. So if we think about the fabric controller managing what developers, and then, of course, users experience by calling a developer's application and running it, how much execution can it handle in different isolated virtual machines?
Yeah.
That's what I'm asking. Infinitely scalable?
That's the goal, to be infinitely scalable. Right now we've got limits that as the architecture evolves, those limits will get bigger and bigger and bigger. Mm. I told you that we already have customers with hundreds or thousands of instances running as part of their applications.
Okay.
So in the future, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, that's what we aspire to.
Okay.
And assuming Azure is successful, we'll eventually see workloads like that.
Great. I hope so.
Yeah.
I'm sure it will be.
Yeah.
And
that's part of actually the evolution of the fabric, is making it scale up to those kinds of numbers.
Okay.
And because it ends up simplifying life in some cases. Right now, our scalability numbers are small, and that's so we've got multiple fabrics inside of the data center, which you've got to manage each fabric somewhat independently. Mm-hmm. The number of machines that a fabric manages is, in a sense, today a limiter on the number of instances that if you wanted to throw an app and said, I want to run it as big as app as I can, there's a limit on that. And in the future, when we have one fabric for the whole data center, that limit just inherently will go way up. And then, beyond that, being able to span applications across data centers would be another step to really getting huge scale.
Absolutely. And now, going back to one of the things I'm trying to do for my own kind of edification or ability to comprehend this stuff, is you know, kind of keep drawing analogies to Windows.
Yeah.
So in Windows Azure, what is the analogy to the Windows Memory Manager? So your talk at PDC, by the way, was amazing, the two talks.
Thanks.
The highest rated
Memory Manager talks.
Yeah, the highest rated talks at PDC, yeah. Which of course really had nothing to do with what the PDC was for, but that's a beautiful thing. So is there an analogy there at your level?
Yeah, the analogy is if you look at the memory manager, what it's doing is assigning resources, a certain kind of resource, the RAM or the machine, mm-hmm. and managing that. And what the fabric, one of the roles of the fabric is assigning resources in the data center. And there's a number of different resources. I think the resource that's most equivalent to RAM are virtual machines.
Hmm.
And so the memory manager, when it's assigning RAM to a particular process, it's got intelligent policies about how to do that. The fabric has intelligent policies about which physical machines and which racks to create VMs on for an application.
Mm-hmm.
So that allocation algorithm is pretty complex today, and we expect it to get more sophisticated as we go forward.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a number of constraints, just like the memory manager does, or any resource management inside of the Windows kernel does,
mm-hmm.
Hard constraints, like the application says that I want to allocate memory from a particular NUMA node, or the application says I want my thread to only run on this core. One of the hard constraints of an Azure application is how many instances do I want of each of these role types, how many update domains do I have, how many fault domains do I have, and we've got to honor those. That's part of the contract we've got with applications. And then we do soft constraint placement too, which is two roles of the same update domain, different role type, different roles of the application, like the if you had two middle tiers or a front end and a middle mm-hmm. tier, we'd like to put those close to each other because we expect there to be communication between those two. So it'd be nice to, instead of having them way across the data center from each other, that they're ideally in the same rack or even on the same machine.
Totally.
So there's that's part of the allocation algorithm as well, is trying to honor those soft constraints. There's other soft constraints too with respect to placement that make our lives easier in just managing the fabric. And one of the management operations is updating the host OSs.
Okay.
Across, you know, Patch Tuesday comes out, we've got a host OS upgrade to push out to all the machines. And what you don't want to have happen is to take down one machine at a time through these thousands of machines we have in the data center, because that would take a really long time to patch the data center. You know, you'd be done patching it the next past Tuesday and start all over again. And your window,
sure.
You know, certainly when you're updating with security patches, you want to be do it as quickly as possible. So there's constraints on how many machines we can have going through the patch at the same time that are placed on us by the update domains and fault domains of the services that are running on those machines.
Okay.
So we got to honor those. So we do the placement in such a way that we can update multiple machines at the same time. Do it smart so that we don't have multiple update domains from the same service on the same machine, because then we're kind of tire hands about how many machines we can update.
Sure, that makes sense. Now, we've talked about this before, but just to reiterate again, all of the machines that run in all of the data centers for Windows Azure or x64, period.
Correct.
x64, you know, probably a ton of RAM, and all capable of running virtual machines, and actually could be hosting any number of operating systems. Is this correct or incorrect?
This is correct.
So, in your turn...
I feel like you're going to try to trick me somewhere.
I'm not going to try. How can I trick right. Mark Percinovich? Are you kidding?
Yeah.
This is me. So, if I'm running Windows Server 2008 R2 in a virtual machine, we talked about that at the PDC.
Yeah.
And my code is executing inside of that virtual machine.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually running on top of the fabric controller, or as far as the fabric controller is concerned, that's just some thread, or just, I mean, talk to me about
if that question makes sense. Running on top of the fabric controller. So that virtual machine role instance
yes.
is part of your Azure application, which we call an Azure service.
Yes.
Okay. That Azure service is composed of one or more roles.
Mm-hmm.
And those roles, for each one of those roles, you have one or more instances of the role.
Okay.
Okay. So in the kind of canonical three-tier thing that we were talking about earlier, mm-hmm. let's say you got a web role, which is your front end, and you've got two instances of that role, and then you got a middle tier, that's your worker role, and you've got three instances of that, and they're all talking to SQL, Azure, mm-hmm. or Azure Storage. The you could also, instead of having a worker role, use a VM role, and that just means you're bringing your own VHD to the cloud, your Hyper-V VHD.
Got it.
And we'll run that instead of the standard worker role image.
Okay.
So whatever's in there is your stuff, mm-hmm. plus as part of building it with the SDK, we stick our guest agent in there.
Okay.
That knows how to talk to the host agent, which knows how to talk to the Fabric controller.
I see.
The from the Fabric controller's perspective, it's instead of pulling one of the OS images out of our library, we just use yours. And other than that, it's a VM that spins up, and our view of that VM is, well, how big is it? How much disk do we give it, and how much memory do we give it? How many cores do we give it? Mm-hmm. And then we monitor the health of what's going on inside of it at a very simplistic level. The guest agent will tell us, you've got a role entry point, and the guest agent's talking to your role entry point, which is a DLL mm-hmm. that you provide. And we tell you when to start, you tell us when you've started, and we also heartbeat you.
Okay.
And if we see you die, we're going to automatically restart you.
Nice.
So that's the very simple health model. We don't know anything about really what's going on inside of your application inside that VM, other than your entry point, your role DLL, is alive or not.
Interesting. Now, you've given a lot of talks recently. I mean, you're at the PDC, of course. You did the Inside Windows Azure uh-huh. talk, which I highly recommend people go watch so they can really not be randomized by my weird questions or bad questions, however you look at it. You've done a lot of these really interesting talks. What have the people in the audience come up and asked you afterwards? Or is there some sort of pattern of confusion or some level of concern or something that you're seeing?
After these Azure talks?
Yeah.
It's kind of surprising because I don't have questions. People don't really have questions. I think that a lot of people that come into these talks, this is kind of interesting because with the Windows client talks, which I've been doing forever, I really know the Windows client audience. And that's fairly unchanging over time. I know what level of knowledge people have about the way Windows works and what they don't. For a medium-level audience to a sophisticated audience, if I'm giving a 400-level talk, mm-hmm. I pretty much know where to aim.
Okay.
To try to get hit people where it's making sense to them.
Okay.
With Azure Talks, I think I haven't figured out what the audience really looks like, and I think part of the problem is that it's a really weird mix that come to these Azure Talks. There's people that have heard the term Windows Azure, and they're coming to the talk just to try to learn about what the heck it is, and there's people that actually are coming to the talk, they've programmed Windows Azure, they've played with it for a while, they know... about the concepts that Windows Azure is providing, and they're coming just to learn the next level of detail. Mm. So, trying to aim at a spot where I'm not too deep for some people and too light for others is tough.
I bet.
For something like that. And I'm still... It's going to, I think, take a while before you start to see more homogeneity in the audience. I think right now it's like, if you did a poll, it's probably, I'd guess... 30 or 40% of the people, just based on raising hands, have played with Azure, and the rest of the people have heard the term, maybe know a few things about it, but don't really know anything detailed.
Okay.
So when I give the talk, like at the PDC, what I typically get is people coming up and saying, "Wow, I've never, that now it makes sense to me. I get what platform as a service is doing for me, and I see why you guys believe in this, and that clarified a whole bunch of." Stuff for me, I guess. Going one level beneath the marketing.
Yes.
That's on top and seeing what is it really.
Yes, exactly.
I think is what people come away with. At this point, it's not questions. I think when you get a little more evolved and the audiences get more familiar with things, then it'll be more detailed questions like, "Hey, I'm trying to do this thing, mm-hmm. but it's not working the way I expect. What's going on?" Mm-hmm. I haven't gotten any of those kinds of things.
Understood. Now, I mean, that's a great term, platform as a service.
Yeah.
Windows, in some sense, even on your nice little laptop over there, that's not very useful without services.
Right.
Because essentially that's what an operating system does. It gives you services to hardware. That's how I interact with it. Even if I'm a driver writer, I still have to write high enough, you know, language to be able to shoot to work with the software that's running on the hardware. So services we get, platforms we get. So the difference, though, I guess the complexity for me anyways, I mean, this is called Windows Azure. It's an operating system in the sky. It's a platform in the sky. It's a host of services in the sky, just like Windows that runs on your desktop. Yeah. It's composed of services and applications that aren't services and blah, blah, blah. You have user mode and kernel mode and a lot of rocket science happens for you.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it abstracts away the hardware, the processor, the memory.
In this case of Azure, it's abstracting away the data center. It's abstracting away the network configuration of load balancers and routers and aggregators and... It's abstracting away the hardware to turn on the machine. It's abstracting away the fact, you know, the blades, and it's taking all that and it's dealing with that low level stuff for you, so you don't have to worry about it. When you set up a Windows Server, kind of a standard Windows Server, and you want to configure a SQL Server on it, and you want to make it highly available, you know, you got to go buy the box, you got to configure it, you know, set up things in the BIOS, set up the switches to connect to things, get clustering set up on it, SQL set up on it, configure the OS, set up patching, set up management, a whole bunch of things that are taken care of for you when you go to the cloud. You just say, hey, I've got this app, wants to talk to SQL Azure, so create me a SQL Azure database and poof, deploy it, and a few minutes later, you got it up and running.
That is really incredible. I mean, it's awesome. Yeah.
I mean, when we talk to IT departments about... the processes that they go through, and even our own MSIT, when somebody wants to deploy a line of business app, and they go to their IT department and say, hey, we got a line of business app to deploy. They say, well, like, you know, what are the requirements? What size server do we need to get? What kind of networking do we want? What domain should it be joined to? And the process of going from getting what it is to actually setting it up and getting it ready takes 3 to 6 months on average is what we see with IT departments. The platform as a service, you write your line of business application, literally 10 minutes after you finish writing it, it can be up and running and providing services to you.
Excellent.
Which IT departments are kind of nervous about, because we see developers going, hey, you know what, I don't need to talk to IT at all, just let me go right to the cloud.
Well, that's, you know what, beautiful segue, because that's what I've been trying to ask. And I think a lot of people I've seen on Channel 9, I've seen in various forums, and the way that we go about marketing this is essentially akin to, hey, you don't need an IT department anymore. But let's talk about, A, why that's not true, and B, what does this mean for IT professionals? I'm going to put my IT professional hat on. I'm not one. I don't really know much about it, but you do. And what does it mean for their evolution? They're going to have to learn new skills. What's going on here?
Yeah, so one of the things that IT people complain about typically is being overloaded with work, the mundane work of troubleshooting things and setting things up and monitoring the low-level stuff. What Platform as a Service does is say you don't have to worry about that anymore.
Okay.
Now you can focus on the things that you really want to pay attention to, which is making sure that your company controls are being adhered to, your company policies for running software and the management of data and where it is and how it's backed up and who has access to what resources and how much access do they get and how much resource do you give this department and that department and how do you monitor the costs and limit the costs and all of that stuff are still IT operations.
Sure.
That will still be required. And even just monitoring the application health itself on behalf of the people that, you know, is this line of business app really running? How's it behaving? What's its kind of load like? Do I need to provision more instances of it? Those kinds of things are still IT operations, still IT responsibilities, even in this cloud world. So IT will definitely, it's not like IT goes away. You still need somebody to manage what's going on compute-wise and application-wise. You can't, you know, developer that writes the line of business app, he's not going to be the guy that is making sure that corporate security policies are being followed and controls on the data where it's placed and how much it's being backed up at the right place and verify those backups and all of that kind of process that really makes it a real line of business app that's compliant with the company's procedures.
Sure.
Makes it. So so I don't see IT going away. The role of IT will shift a little bit, and you won't, you'll see less and less IT focused on, do I know how to install this server app and configure it?
Sure. Now let me ask you this, though, because this is also obviously related, and it's actually really cool, the Azure in a can, or whatever we're calling it. You just dump a can in your garage.
We prefer to call it appliance.
What do we call it?
Appliance.
Okay, Azure and appliance.
Yeah.
In that case, an IT professional is going to need to be a little bit more in tune with how Windows Azure works, and to make sure that things at even lower levels are working well.
Yeah.
How does that work? Can I attach my appliance to the network and say, hey, Microsoft, update me when something has to, like, the stuff Cutler's working on, Red Dog OS, if that has to be updated, you'd hope it wouldn't, but if it does, I'm sure it may at some point.
Yeah. We'll add new features and functionality and performance.
Yes. Is there a Windows update equivalent?
Yes, there will be. So a lot of the appliance stuff we're working on right now.
Okay.
So there's things that I...
Don't say anything.
Yeah.
That's cool. So
I mean, things that you imagine, like, will the software get updated?
We can't talk about that now. But it's such an obvious thing. No, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, so great.
There'll definitely be a Windows update for the appliance.
Okay.
And
perfect.
There'll definitely be... I talked about how somebody won't know how to set up SQL Server or whatever server application. That'll become something that fewer and fewer IT pros do over time, and it'll be a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get the appliance in-house, you've got to have people that know how to monitor the health of the appliance and the health of the services in the appliance, and they're responsible for that because things go wrong.
Yes.
And one of the goals of the appliance is that, just like any other Microsoft application, that only when things go really, really wrong do you need to actually pick up the phone and call Microsoft support. That really, things should just work, and even when some things don't work, that you should be able to figure out what's going on and address it.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a quick question about appliance in general, because I think it's an interesting concept. Besides, wanting to have complete physical control over your data, your information, your secure, whatever.
Yeah.
Why else would I want to add that sort of level of commitment to this essentially data service in a can? I always keep saying that. I just think it sounds better. But essentially, my own data center that comes in a nice little wrapper.
Yeah.
That I put down somewhere on my property, and nobody else can get around it, and I have complete control over it. I mean, how is that better than just a server, or two servers, or four servers, or 15 servers that don't connect? That's what I'm asking.
Okay, so why not just buy a bunch of servers?
Yes.
Okay. Because you're getting platform as a service in a can, as you would say.
Okay.
The configuration of the networking within that, the blades within that, all is taken care of for you just because of the fact that it comes in the appliance.
Mm-hmm.
Plus the applications you can deploy to it. It is an operating system, so you deploy applications to it. And one of the, obviously, I think it's an obvious principle that we're going to follow is that you can run an app in the appliance. That same app will run in the Azure Public Cloud, the Windows Azure Public Cloud.
Mm-hmm.
That one of the characteristics of these cloud applications, or a couple of the characteristics, there's the ability to scale and high availability.
Mm-hmm.
When you want availability, like I said, for standalone servers, you've got to do clustering and clustered file systems or SANs, and you've got to go through a lot of hoops to set up high availability and scale. And scalability means typically scaling up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just add more RAM, add more CPUs. Whereas with an appliance, you want to scale up your app, just fire up a few more instances of the roles. You want availability, you get it because the app is designed in a way that can tolerate failures.
Fair enough.
So the plus that all that infrastructure is just is at a level beneath you what you have to really kind of worry about setting up and managing.
Okay. Now, but on the other hand, it's if the great thing about sending things up to this distributed operating system in the sky that has data centers all over the planet, redundancy, which is quite amazing and ridiculous to some degree. I mean, it's always going to be available unless, you know, I just can't connect to the network or all of the data centers go down at the same time. But my point is, when it's an appliance on your own property, you still have to think about things like redundancy, data backup. You're going to have to deal with RAID disks to some degree. I mean,
yeah, you're going to be taking on some of that kind of responsibility for the appliance itself.
Yes.
Now, one of the other places where you see appliances really being taking hold and really being attractive is in the hosting market.
Mm.
So instead of you getting the appliance because of you don't like the multi-tenancy of the cloud, I want my code to be running really isolated, not on the same machine as somebody else's code because I'm really ultra super paranoid.
Yeah, like the military.
Yeah. So, the military probably would have hosted themselves.
Yes. But, okay.
But you might say, I'm going to use a hoster. I'm going to get my private cloud hosted offsite by a hoster that I trust, that's certified, compliant with these 5 standards that my business needs to adhere to for HIPAA and SOX and whatever else, that focuses on my niche of requirements. And they will have an Azure appliance, Windows Azure appliance there, and that's basically my appliance, but they're worrying about, as part of them providing it, backing it up and the other things that I would have to worry about if I brought it on-premise.
Okay, so enough with appliance.
Yeah.
And I won't call it in the can anymore because I don't want to offend anybody. Great idea. Let's move back to you again. And one of the things you did, as we've learned in your history through Channel 9 and your blog and certainly conversations I've had with you, is the way you taught yourself to learn about Windows was to really explore it and really follow what your code was doing, which led to the advent of the successful business you created, SIS Internals. Are you doing the same thing with Azure? I mean, is that how you're learning about how this stuff really works and then developing your tools around it? Is it the same sort of thing, or you just go and, hey, Dave, let's get some coffee, man. Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about this. I mean, I'm sure it's a combination, but...
Yeah. No, it is a combination. There's looking at the source code. There's actually, I mean, I have my own services that I play with, and I experiment with what happens if I do this, what happens if I do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the... And then if there's a question, maybe go to the source code to see why it's behaving a certain way.
Okay.
So it... You know, it is... I still have tons to learn because I just joined the team, 3 months ago.
Exactly.
But... It is learning basically in as many different ways as I can. I've read books like Sriram Krishnan has written a book on Azure programming. That's the first thing that I got when I made the call to move to this team, is bought that book to learn the fundamentals from him.
Excellent. And has anything surprised you since you've dug a little deeper into it? I mean, so when you decided to make the change from Windows to Windows Azure, you see a bright future in this. There's a great technical problem. I want to make things something clear that people got confused with at our talk during PDC. Just because you don't work on Windows anymore doesn't mean you aren't still involved with that group and learning about what they're doing, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
You should get that out there.
Yeah. I still have friends there. I still work. You know, I delivered talks in the client track.
Yeah.
It's not like I had a lobotomy when I came over. you know nothing about Windows anymore.
Exactly.
Or not interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
I've been updating SysInternals tools that are focused on Windows Process Explorer update just a few days ago.
Perfect.
So that's, and I'm working on the 6th edition of the book as much as I can.
Mm-hmm.
So still we're doing that kind of stuff.
So are you going to write a book like Windows Azure Internals?
Actually, so I don't know. I haven't figured out yet.
Okay.
I think I've got more to learn before I figure out what that kind of book would look like.
Sure.
Actually, I was talking with Don Box yesterday and asked me the same question. And he even volunteered to buy the first copy.
So. Did he?
Yeah.
Right on. Hey, I'll buy it because I think to be honest, like you said earlier, I think it could be a part of the reason that people aren't coming up with these profound questions for you afterwards for some of these talks is because it's just all so very new.
Yeah. I'm trying to... one of the things that makes the Windows Internals book interesting to people is the stuff that's covered there is visible to their applications or what they're programming.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the goals of Azure is to be invisible as possible. So it's the parts that are interesting are where your application meets the Fabric controller and meets Windows Azure. What happens?
Yeah.
Because that kind of information is useful for you just understanding what, you know, when you're seeing the deploying progress bar, what's actually happening underneath the hood.
Mm-hmm.
And once you understand the way that things behave and understand the limits, then you can design your application with that kind of stuff in mind. When things go wrong, you can understand how the pieces are fitting together.
Okay.
So I've got to figure out if there's enough meat at the technical level that I like to write at,
mm-hmm.
to talk about, to
well, I think
write a book.
Certainly how, and we can't, you know, share this publicly, and it's totally understandable why we can't, but at the very underpinnings of this operating system, it's incredibly interesting, the work that's being done on the hardware, stuff that's closest to the metal. And I think that's a really interesting conversation. Hopefully someday we can talk about that publicly. Now, and there's no secret reason as why we can't. We just don't want to share it yet. So one more thing on the appliance. I just had an idea when you were talking.
Uh-huh.
Building questions out of real conversation. I get an appliance dropped off because I also want to extend Windows Azure. So in some sense, on Windows, when I write a kernel mode driver, I'm extending the functionality of Windows.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I'm doing. So now I can deal with my piece of hardware that I attach to it. Is there a notion of being able to do something like that? Not in the public Azure where you can mess things up, but in my private cloud, my private Azure. Would that even make sense if I wanted to write at that level? Could you? Why would I?
I don't think that's something we'd probably support.
Okay.
Just because, first of all, it's not clear what scenarios really there are for
sure.
that kind of thing.
That's just a random Charles scenario.
And even if it was, it'd probably be way down the list of priorities to go enabling that kind of thing. But also, one of the reasons we call it an appliance is because it should be appliance-like. You just turn it on, it just works.
Yes.
The second you start messing around with the internals of it, then you're going to probably screw it up, and mm-hmm. we're probably going to have to get in, you know, you're going to be calling Microsoft and saying, this doesn't work, and we'll go in to dig in and say, well, it's because you wrote a driver that crashes.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, so I guess beyond IT people, I mean, hey, It's the driver writers that are the ones that are threatened here. Just kidding. Just playing. But yeah, I mean, beautiful story. So in other words, before we end this, you're happy, you're stoked you made the move, you're learning a lot, the future's bright. Where are we? Talk to me. You know, when you think platform as a service, besides everyone being excited about it, the momentum that's going on in the industry, do you think it's going to be successful? You think platform as a service really is the future?
Yeah, I think that we're at the beginning of this, the cloud revolution,
mm-hmm.
And platform as a service being the place where Microsoft's going to build this operating system. Like, you know, we're talking about appliances.
Yes.
I mean, with the benefits you get out of the appliance model,
mm-hmm.
whether it's hosted in the hoster's environment, hosted on-premise, or you're taking advantage of the public
mm-hmm.
cloud, the public platform as a service, Windows Azure. I don't see in 10 years why you'd want to buy a standalone server, other than to replace your existing servers that you've mm-hmm. got workloads running on that would be very hard to move off.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you're going to see, you know, IT and business leaders at companies realize that just enormous return on investment you get from going this path. Just to take a look at the availability and scalability you get. I mean, it'd be great if your application could tolerate hardware outages.
Yes.
It'd be great if you could update it without taking it down for a while.
Yes.
So, and all the cloud programming model that we're building in Platform as a Service supports those kinds of things. So, I think that we're at the beginning. We're going to see a hockey stick at some point here where the world just rushes in this direction.
Okay. I hope the data centers are ready for that gold rush.
Yeah.
All right. Great to see you again, man.
All right. Thanks, Ross.
We'll come and talk to you again.
All right.
Cheers.